Welcome to Spook Pod. This is Courtney.
And this is Emily.
Everybody, you are back listening to another episode of Spook Pod.
Yeah, hi.
And hi from Ozzy, because he just decided to be awful. So, just a little warning, I am puppy sitting right now. I have a crazy... Can you hear him? Because he is, like, all up in my business
right now. I can hear a little bit, but I don't think it's picking up everything. You're fine.
As soon as I started talking, he's like, play with me! And I have nowhere else to put him, so I have a puppy with me during this recording. I'm really hoping he falls asleep soon. But if you hear any pitter-patter or any noises or any breathing in the background, that's Ozzy.
Not me. I did not suddenly get breath heavy on the mic. I swear I'm a little sick, but I'm not disgusting yet.
I am normally breath heavy on the mic when you're talking, and I have to cut it out.
Yeah, but that's editing.
I've sent you clips.
They never know that you heavy breathe into the mic while I'm talking because we edit that out.
But sometimes I'm like, holy shit. Like, I'm like sitting there like as you're talking and I'm like, what am I doing?
It's that phone call where you pick up and you just hear heavy breathing. That's you when I talk.
That's me. I'm like, why am I doing that? Oh my God. How do I have any friends?
Well, it's because most of us are from a distance. We don't really get the breath on us.
And I had to, man, I am just a huge mess today because I had to turn off my air conditioning in order to record because it's too loud. But I'm sweating because I just finished teaching yoga. So I'm like wearing my glasses, but I'm like fogging up my glasses because I'm so sweaty. And then I can't see, like I can't see the screen either way. Because I'm either fogging up the glasses or I have no glasses.
Let's just say it's a really good thing you guys aren't watching us this week, because neither one of us is in fighting shape.
We're a huge mess. Oh, crap. Okay. No, I don't think I can wear my glasses. All right. Sorry. Welcome to today's episode. Let's dive in. We are doing something a little tiny bit different, although not fully, today. Which is, we are talking about the life and death of Peter R. de Vries.
Something fairly recent. Something I'm super bummed about, you know.
Yeah, me too. So if you've been listening to our episodes regularly, then you have probably heard us mention him before. He is a very common figure in a lot of our cases, because he was, and still is, probably the most famous crime journalist in the Netherlands. He was super well known, like very famous in this country, and he had his own television show for a number of years. He played a hand in bringing media attention and justice to a lot of cases. For example, one of the cases we just recorded, the Putten murder, where those two men were wrongfully convicted. The only reason that that case was looked into again was because of the work that Peter did with it. But then, on July 6th, 2021, not even 2 years ago at the time of this recording, Peter was shot dead on the streets of Amsterdam after leaving a television interview. He was 64 years old at the time of his death. To me, I don't know, his death feels really weird to me because I was living in the Netherlands at this time. I had actually, like, I moved there in 2020, so I'm very new to the country, but in a lot of the stories that I tell on this podcast, it feels like it's, like, before my time and I'm just learning about a story versus what happened to Peter.
You could have prevented it and you chose not to.
Yeah, I guess so. But it feels more like I'm living the story, you know, rather than just learning about it, if that makes sense. Like, I'm seeing it play out in the news. I'm seeing how the country has been shocked by it. I'm seeing people leaving flowers everywhere, like things like that. So not that this case has anything to do with me, really, but it just feels more close to home now after experiencing those things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when this happened, it stuck with me and it shocked me just like it shocked the rest of the country. So in this episode, we are going to tell his story, like all the way through, from like his life, his death, and his story of justice actually isn't fully done yet. It's still making its way through the courts and the justice system here in the Netherlands. Generally, I like to tell stories on the podcast after they're concluded so that our episodes can give more of that like finality and closure with them. Emily, I know you like that when everything is done.
Not having answers.
I know that about you.
And so like even if the case is done but you're like, we don't really know who did it, I'm like, I hate this. I hate the case. I hate everything.
Yeah, in this one, I think that we know who did it, but we don't know if they are going to be found guilty or their sentence or anything like that. So, but yeah, and because we keep talking about Peter like over and over again in our episodes, we keep being like, oh, and then Peter DeVries popped in to offer his support. So I just thought it was better to just have an episode that was fully on him right now so that we can direct people here. If they want to know more about him and his work and his life mission, because he was a super cool guy. He had a very colorful and interesting life.
And I mentioned earlier to Courtney that I'm super glad this episode is happening. Well, both of us are so on our game and at the peak of our performance ability.
Yeah. Peak of performance. And it's like, it feels like an important episode and we're like dying. The fact that Peter was murdered, I think, will always blow my mind. I mean, I know, Emily, you said, like, it's statistically more likely just based on the type of work that he was involved in. And as we'll come to see, like, this guy got death threats basically every single day of his life.
And I mean, at what point are you like, which ones are real and which ones aren't real? And where do you stop letting them rule what you do? And...
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. So let's dive into his story. Let's get started, shall we? Peter R. DeVries. I say his name like Peter because that's how he would pronounce it, although I'm probably still doing it badly, but he doesn't say like Peter, he says Peter. But he was born on November 14th, 1956 in Aalsmeer, which is not too far outside of Amsterdam. The R in his name, fun fact, actually stands for Rudolph. So Peter Rudolph de Vries. He grew up living with his mother, his father, and five other siblings. His father was also a pretty stellar guy. He was named Wouter de Vries, senior as well. And he was a member of the resistance against the German occupiers during World War II.
Okay, so wait. So does Peter have an older brother then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Named Wouter. Yeah.
I was like, why is he a senior if Peter is Peter? Continue.
Yeah, it's not Peter. But yeah, so just for anyone that doesn't know, like during World War II, Hitler invaded and took over the Netherlands, but Peter's dad was actively involved in the resistance against the Nazis and went out and like shot one or more Germans, it said. One or more Germans were shot by Peter's dad during his time with the rebellion. Peter only learned about this after his dad died, actually, in 1997. But Peter said he kind of had a hard time growing up. He had a pretty lonely life. Like, there's a lot of children in his family, so he didn't get a lot of attention. And he was actually the only child in his family who basically absolutely refused point blank to go to church. His family was pretty religious, but he was not, like, since day one. Like, even as a child, he knew that about himself. And he would not go to church, and so his family, he was essentially like the black sheep of his family. And as I was reading about him, I got a little bit of a vigilante attitude from him. Also a little bit of like arrogance and cockiness. I think that he wanted to be Batman, probably. He was also like a huge thorn in the side of the police and the courts. Like he was just always like putting himself into places. But he did a really good job and he got a lot of shit done and made a lot of progress. But overall, I actually think that there was a very thin line between him becoming a bad guy versus him becoming the person that he became, who is this person that like fights crime and injustice on all angles the way that he did. So you'll see more about this as I get into his story. He did get into some trouble as a teenager, and his family was really worried about how he would turn out. It was like the talk of the family that they had no idea what would happen to Pater. So the crimes that he committed as a teenager, they were kind of like stupid young person shit, but at the same time, they weren't that common, you know? So he was convicted of shoplifting. He was convicted of smashing the windows of a school. He also, this one's funny, I like this one. In order to make money, he would steal crates at the back of a supermarket and then carry them around to the front to like return them to the supermarket in exchange for like getting a deposit back.
I
don't really know what these crates were.
I'm offended. As a retail worker, I am offended.
Nah, you'd do it too if you wanted to make a quick buck. No, I wouldn't. I'd be too scared.
Listen, I'm a good kid.
Yeah, you follow all the rules.
I stole really a pencil once. I stole a lip gloss once. And I remember those two times, and I have been guilty about them ever since.
One time my friend, like, we were, like, at this, it was a stupid little store, and she, like, tried on this ring. I mean, the ring probably cost, like, $5, and we left the store, and she didn't realize that she was still wearing it, and we got, like, we walked basically all the way home, and then she realized she had this ring on, and she's like, oh my god, we have to go back, and she made me walk all the way back so she could return the ring. But yeah, that's how we grew up. Pater was into some shit. He also stole money from his parents. He stole money from his school. So he was a bit of a problem child. But maybe the military straightened him out, because from 1976 to 1977, when he was 20 and 21 years old, he was enlisted in the Royal Netherlands Army. And it was in March of 1978, when he left the army, that he would get his first job in journalism, working as a student reporter at the daily newspaper De Telegraaf in The Hague. The first job that he had, this was just general reporting, but after a year, he was transferred to the editorial office in Amsterdam, and from there, he began to specialize in crime reporting. He said that there was this story about an old woman who got, like, chopped up to pieces, and that is what made him interested in crime.
I mean, we've all been there.
Yeah. But crime was his wheelhouse. Like, he began to really shine because he was really good at it. He was so good at getting to the bottom of things. Like, I think he just had the temperament and the persistence, you know, for this type of work.
I mean, he also has the mindset. Like, he did some crime, so he's got that, he can get inside. I've talked about this with, like, various, like, coworkers before, where I'm like, I can kind of figure out when someone's scamming me at work. Like, when they're, I'm, like, seriously.
Oh no, Emily, are you gonna get scammed?
No, I just mean, like, because people come in and they, like, are constantly like, oh, I bought this and I tried it and it didn't work for me and I'd like to return it and blah, 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 and you open it up and the thing's gone and you're like, okay, well, obviously you still have. Anyways, you're returning an empty box is basically what I'm, you know? And I'm like, you know, some of the stuff that people come up with to, like, scam, like, retail locations or people in the community or whatever, like, I don't have that kind of brain. I don't sit in my house going like, oh, I wonder how I can scam Martha down the road out of $50,000 by pretending that I love her. Like, I don't do that kind of stuff. But I feel like he had already kind of been dabbling in that. And so if you have that mindset and you can get into the mindset of someone who's doing those things, bam, easy. You can solve crime.
True. He was also, like, kind of a hothead.
Courtney thinks Peter was hot.
And he was, yeah, he was really passionate and just, like, just really good at this. And people took notice because he was good at it, which led to his kidnapping in 1982. When I first read this story, I was like, okay, this cannot be a true story. Like, it can't be true. But no one has disputed it, and it is reported on, so I'm like, okay, I guess this is true. So, in 1982, Peter was kidnapped by two men and held in a boarded-up farmhouse overnight in a town called Emmen. The kidnappers were trying to get a ransom of 2 million guilders from the Telegraph, where he worked. Guilders was the currency that the Netherlands used before the euro. And this was a sizable ransom. In euros, it's about 1 million, so a lot of money. It didn't work out, though, for the kidnappers at all. So Peter said he noticed right away that these guys were just complete amateurs and that they were buckling under the pressure of this kidnapping.
Okay, here's the thing. Can you imagine getting together with a friend, deciding that you're going to kidnap Peter, who's like a fairly well-known crime reporter, getting him to the location, and then him just mocking you for being shitty kidnappers the whole time, and knowing that he's probably right? Do you know how mad you'd get? Can't kill him because you want the money. So now you're just stuck with this sardonic, biting man sitting there yelling at you in his probably very like hefty linguistics. And basically telling you you're stupid over and over and over again. Like, I feel like it hurts as a kidnapper to hear that you're bad at kidnapping.
Yeah, yeah, it would. And I can just see, like, Pedro was afraid of nothing at all. So I can imagine that he was just sitting there, like, cocky as hell and just intimidating the shit out of his kidnappers and just, like, completely unfazed.
Or being like, oh, let me guess what's next. You're gonna do this, this, or this. Oh, I'm so scared. Like, I can just... the mockery that I assume went on.
So the next day, they were driving Peter somewhere else, and Peter ended up having to drive because one of the men drank coffee with sleeping pills that was intended for Peter to fall asleep. So Peter's like, well, I'll drive then. And he drove straight to the police station and handed over.
What happened to the other guy? Was he just like, did he not have a license?
I have no idea. That's why I didn't understand this story. That's why I was like, well, there's two of them. But maybe that guy just, like, gave in. He's like, okay,
at
like,
that
I
point,
got drunk.
Yeah, at that point, the ineptitude of the captor, you're like, he's right, we failed. Let's
yeah,
just
like,
go.
Yeah, like, we failed. My partner is asleep. So, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, so Peter handed over his kidnapper. No harm done. I feel like kidnappings was something that was like really popular in the 80s for some reason.
All of the movies like... that prepared me to be kidnapped in my life and then it never happened. And
yeah,
I was like, why
like...
do I have this knowledge?
Like, you never hear about kidnappings and ransoms anymore. It feels like it was a fad that happened in the 80s.
I feel like Kevin McAllister, aka Macaulay Culkin, braced me for a life of criminal activity that I was not prepared for, and that never happened. All of those paint cans I bought have gone to waste.
Yeah, it's not a popular pastime anymore.
Oh my god, I'm sorry, I have to stop you, because it must be so much harder to kidnap people. Like, you think about it, in the 90s, when there were no cell phones and you literally couldn't track location, it was probably so simple because you just take someone and take them to a different location and don't tell people where that is. But a kidnapper now, you get caught on video, so they know who you are. They track your phone immediately. There you are in the old barn off, you know, Highway 65, exit 3, let's go. and you're done. You're toast. So there's,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
How could you have kidnapping as a pastime unless you were completely off-grid to begin with? Like, there has to be so much preparation into a kidnapping. Oh, that's gotta suck. I'm sorry. Just a whole faucet of crime life just cut from the roster.
Yeah, no more fun kidnapping.
Like, I wonder if there, like, there's definitely specialist criminals, right? Like, hi, I'm a shoplifter. Oh, hi, grand larceny over here. Oh, yeah, grand theft auto, what's up? And then the guy's like, I'm a kidnapper. And they're like, ooh, not much business there, is there, friend?
You're obsolete.
Yeah,
now.
Ooh, that's a rough run.
But it was around this time as well, like around the 1980s, that Pater would be married and would have two children with his wife, a daughter, Kelly, and a son, Royce. Royce was born the same year as you, Emily, 1989.
Hey-oh.
And just jumping quickly into the future, but Pater would eventually get divorced in 2013, but remain on good terms with his ex-wife. And he would become a grandfather, too. But jumping back, so in 1987, after working for about 10 years at De Telegraaf, Pater resigned and became the editor-in-chief of a magazine called Actuel, and he turned it into a crime magazine. But then in 1991, a few years after that, he decided to just become a completely independent crime reporter, and he wrote for many different magazines and newspapers. He is best known, though, for his Netherlands television program, which began in 1995. It was called Peter R. de Vries Crime Reporter, or in Dutch, Peter R. de Vries Misdaadverslaggever. That's a hard word.
I honestly love that word. It's got many of my favorite sounds in it. I'll never be able to say it, but I think it's awesome
so
to look at. It's the ever at the end that throws me off, too, because you'd think it would just be Misdaadverslaggever. But it's like there's an ever in there that you have to get out. My mouth doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, no, it's a hard one. And it was this time, as he had his television program, that he really began to become a household name in the Netherlands. So he would evolve, you know, from just being a normal reporter of the crimes to actually, like, advocating and fighting the crime and sharing it on his television program. He said, "The more you do this job, the more you can easily notice the mistakes being done in investigations, and the more families come to you, like, begging for support and help." And he would take this on. Like, he became an advocate for so many families, sharing their story, trying to get justice for them.
But I think it also really bridges a gap because, like, looking at law enforcement, you can't really fault them because there are a lot of regulations and rules and red tape that law enforcement has to go through, mandated things that they have to do. And when you are an independent operator, you don't have to deal with that. So you can very much go ahead and jump over what would take the police potentially months to get through and then throw it all in their lap and be like, here you go, like, solve the case, blah, blah, blah. So I just feel like, as much as, like, the police can get stuck, this is that kind of thing where he can get past those bumps that maybe they can't necessarily get through. That he doesn't have to worry about jurisdiction. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, like, politics, anything else that might be weighing on that department. So I think that that's kind of a cool little bridge that he provided.
Yeah, and it's probably why law enforcement was often annoyed at him. But he really dealt with, like, all sorts of cases. It was, like, murder cases, rape cases, fraud, child pornography, like, anything, basically. And not infrequently, his television show, with or without a hidden camera, it actually led to the finding of several perpetrators and, you know, like, releasing the innocent, like with the example of the Putin murder case, like, just tracking events. And it led to a lot of information coming out in a variety of cases. In 2003, he was named the Dutch Broadcaster of the Year. and he also won an International Emmy Award for his work in the Natalie Holloway case and the secretly recorded video that he had of Yoron the Moron confessing to being involved in her disappearance. I mentioned this video in our coverage of Natalie, but to be honest, like, I didn't believe the story that Yoron told in this video.
I mean, he had so many stories.
He had so many stories. And this was the one where he said that all of a sudden Natalie started, like, choking or seizuring or something, and then she just died. And I don't know, I just don't believe that. And then later, like, Yoron said that he was just telling the people what they wanted to hear, but I don't, he's a psychopath, so we can't trust anything he says. But anyways, Pater's show aired from 1995 to 2012 when he decided to stop. But even though his show was done, he never actually stopped doing the same job that he had been doing since the beginning. So he's still working, fighting all these crime, working with people, being an advocate for people, and still regularly going on talk shows and sharing facts about current or cold cases. On top of all this crime work that he's done, he did so many other cool things throughout his life. So he wrote 13 books, I think. I think the final number I found was 13, so that's what I'm going with. He also started his own political party. He became a football agent, football being soccer in this case, and he was a big Ajax fan. He was in race car rallies. He tried his hand at acting, too. So he played cameos of himself on TV. He played a detective in two Christmas movies. He played a drag queen on a television series called Make Up Your Mind. And then he would go on to be the head of a law firm, although he had absolutely no formal education in law. He did this with his son and two other partners called DeVries and Kasem Advokaten. So advocat is lawyer in Dutch. I guess his son is a lawyer, and he just joined forces with them to do this law firm. He was asked, actually, if he was gonna go to law school, and he said, at this point, I've read so many court documents and been involved in so many cases that I don't think there's anything that I will learn sitting in a school surrounded by 20-year-olds. And that made me laugh.
That's but it's very true. Fair, yeah.
Very true. And he worked at this law firm up until his death. And each day there, every single day, he received more than 100 requests for help from citizens. And he answered every single one by himself. He said, I always read everything, and I've never delegated a letter to anyone else. It would be shocking if someone asked me for help and I ignored it. So there were many high-profile cases over the years that he was involved in. Some of them we've talked about before on our podcast, like Natalie Holloway, Mariana Vatstra, the Putin murder, and the murder of Annika van der Stoep. But there is a lot more, so I'm just going to name a couple here. One really famous one was that of Mabel Visse Smit. So Mabel was betrothed to the Dutch prince, Friso. Friso was his nickname. He had a long-ass name, this dude. It was like Johan, Friso, Bernard, Christian, David, and then whatever his last name was.
Yeah, like, pick a name, bro.
Pick a name. Well, he picked Friso. So Friso is the brother of the current king of the Netherlands, King Willem-Alexander. But at the time that this all happened, we still had Queen Beatrix as the reigning monarch, who is Friso and Willem-Alexander's mother. In 2003, Peter de Vries dropped a bomb into the media about Mabel. Although she was betrothed to the prince, she was apparently also canoodling with the biggest and most famous drug lord and crime boss in the Netherlands, Klaus Bruinsma.
Okay, okay. But, like, ambitious. Props to her. Because you got, like, you got
both,
like,
ends of the spectrum,
the head of
here.
The law and the head of the crime.
Yeah, like, this guy was actually known as the father of the Dutch drug trade. Like, he was a really bad dude. But so, because this came out, this made the government rule that Prince Friso was not allowed to marry Mabel. But he decided he was going to marry her anyways, and he subsequently lost his right to the throne. He was no longer part of the Dutch royal house, and he lost his title as Prince of the Netherlands. So it was a pretty big scandal. I think, honestly, like, the royals are pretty dramatic, but whatever.
Yeah, like, I don't know, the UK royals have done some pretty scandalous shit, and they're still allowed to be royalish.
True. With that book that just came out by Harry.
The tell-all.
Spare. Whenever, like, I see the name Spare, I always think of Harry Potter, like, kill the spare.
Cedric!
Another very well-known case, and one that I have wanted to cover on our show for a long time, but this case has a lot involved with it, a lot, like, so I'm taking my time reading the books for it and all that, but it's the kidnapping of Freddie Heineken. Again, with the kidnapping, like, this happened in the 80s too.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it was the prime time for kidnappers.
So the name Heineken is probably familiar to you, but this was the very wealthy family in the Netherlands who made the Heineken beer. And Freddie was the son of the director of the brewery. And he was kidnapped by a group of ruffians.
Ooh, I like that we just called them ruffians.
Ruffians,
thank you.
Yeah.
Could have only been better if it was scoundrels.
Scoundrels. That too, I would classify them as scoundrels. But Pater closely followed this kidnapping in 1983 for De Telegraaf. He attended all the trials, like, he was very involved in this case. And he actually, in 1994, was able to track down one of the kidnappers who was still a fugitive. And he found Franz Meyer in Paraguay and brought him to justice. Pater would go on to write a book on this case called The Kidnapping of Alfred Heineken, which came out in 1987, and it was told from the viewpoint of Cor van Hout, who was one of the kidnappers. Because of writing this book, Pater actually became very, very good friends with Cor, and actually, like, really loved Cor, really respected Cor. Like, they had a great relationship. And Pater received a lot of backlash for doing this, especially in 2003 when Cor died. Pater had an obituary put in the Telegraph for the most extraordinary man I have ever met. He said, "Crime brought us together. Crime tore us apart. I will never forget our friendship. I'll miss you terribly, Cor." And he gave a speech at Cor's funeral as well. Now, the general public didn't really like that much. They did not like that Pater was close to Cor, but Pater didn't care. Like, it was his good friends, and he had a picture of Cor in his office up until the day he died. The film rights of Pater's book on this case were purchased by an American producer, and in 2015, the film was released under the title Kidnapping Mr. Heineken, where Anthony Hopkins played the role of Freddie Heineken. And this case is actually really crazy, like, when you get into it, which is why I haven't told it on our podcast yet, because there is a lot of twists and turns in the story, so we'll eventually get to it on our show, but it's a pretty interesting case. Another famous case was that of Nabil B. And this one is actually the case that is thought to have led to Pater's death. So in 2019, Pater was an advisor and a confidant to Nabil B., who was the key witness in the Marengo trial. This is a very big criminal case in the Netherlands against 17 suspects, including a guy named Ridwan Taghi. I have no idea how to say that name. But this Ridwan guy is apparently also very bad news. Like, he's originally from Morocco, but he came to the Netherlands in 1980 when he was 3. And he has basically been involved in gangs and stuff like that ever since, eventually making his way into the mafia in the Netherlands and becoming one of the biggest drug lords in the country. And these 17 people that were arrested and charged, it's for, you know, everything that you can think of, from drug trafficking to murders to attempted murders, like everything that the mafia does between the period from 2015 to 2017. The day before Pater was shot, the court ruled that he was allowed to visit Nabil freely in prison to communicate with him and support him as a witness in the case. And I think that this case is still going through the court at this time, too. I don't think this one is concluded either. So, Pater did a lot of work in mafia stuff like that. He was not unfamiliar when it came to things like death threats. He received them all the time. In fact, he had been, like, physically attacked and threatened by a number of people throughout his life that... Even people that he was, like, once close with, and then things went to shit, and then he got a death threat against him. So he had a feud, like, for years with this guy named Steve Brown. Like, it literally went on for years. So in 1997, Steve Brown was a presenter on a television program and wrote a column for a weekly magazine. But that all ended after Pater released a secret tape of him using cocaine in Amsterdam. The paper dropped him, the television program dropped him, like, everyone started
working
with him.
I mean, I'd be a little bendy about that too, you know?
Well, I was like, I don't know, that's a bit lame. Like, all he did was use cocaine.
Yeah.
It's not like he was selling it. He wasn't
right?
selling cocaine.
Right, he wasn't trafficking, he was just... having a good little coke time.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think that, I mean, this happened in 1997. I feel like it was a lot worse and a lot more slanderous and, like, shocking to be caught using drugs back then. I feel like today that probably people would be like, whatever, like, it's just, like, I think drugs are a lot more decriminalized in that sense now, where it's like, okay, if you used drugs, who really cares, you know? But yeah, so he obviously, the Steve Brown guy, was very mad at Pater for essentially ruining his life, right? Ruining his reputation, ruining his career. And in 2004, Pater actually had to pay damages in the amount of 2,500 euros to Steve. That clearly didn't do it for Steve, because in 2007, Steve attacked Pater at some, like, event, and it was captured on camera. And then he attacked him again in 2009. Pater was waiting at a traffic light, and Steve came and, like, ripped open his car door and began beating Pater up and threatening to kill him. And then later that year, Steve actually put a price on Pater's head.
Oh, good
on
grief.
His vlog.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. There was another guy, Willem Holleder, who threatened to kill Pater. So this guy, apparently, in April 2011, Pater and Willem were on a phone call where Willem confessed to various crimes and, like, collaborations with a whole bunch of well-known criminals, stuff like that. This conversation was to be kept secret and published as a will if Willem were to be killed, because they recorded this at a time where Willem was fearing for his life. And they even had a lawyer present for this. It was, like, official business. It wasn't supposed to be recorded. It was only supposed to be written.
Come on, Peter.
Pater made a secret tape. And then in 2018, so Willem apparently, like, was already, like, they had already turned against Pater for some reason at this point. So Pater decided, okay, well, I don't have any loyalty to you then. I'm going to release this tape, which he did. And then, you know, it led to more death threats and stuff like that. So on July 6, 2021, Pater was leaving a television interview around 7:30 at night when he was shot 5 times at close range in the Lange Leiderwarstraat in Amsterdam. One of the shots hit him in the head, but he did not die at this point, and he was taken to the hospital. Within an hour of the shooting, 2 suspects were arrested on the highway fleeing Amsterdam. These 2 suspects were a 35-year-old Polish man, identified as Kamil E., who was suspected as being the getaway driver, and 21-year-old aspiring rapper.
Oh, I already fucking hate him.
Delano G. He was suspected as being the shooter. So Delano, he has a little bit of an obscure relationship, but he's either the nephew or the cousin of one of the henchmen of that guy I talked about before, Ridwan Taghi, the crime boss guy. Delano was due to receive 100,000 euros for the killing, while Kamil was promised 50,000 for driving the car. They probably did not see any of this money, though, because they were arrested within hours of the murder.
Wow, I guess Delano's rap career really didn't take off then.
Did not. It did not. I bet he was so talented.
He seems like he had the world at his feet. Didn't need $100,000 to launch him, or 100,000 euro, sorry, to launch him, because he was so dang good. He just did this for the fun of it.
So Pater fought for his life for 9 days in the hospital, but he did eventually pass away on July 15th, 2021. His death was big news in the Netherlands. 7,500 mourners came to pay their respects at his funeral. And even at like 11 a.m., like way before the funeral even started, the line to see him was 0.5 kilometer long. There were so many flowers laid at the site of the attack and also just in various towns around the country. As a tribute, in July 2021, the mayor of Aalsmeer, which was where Pater was born, decided to name a street in a new neighborhood after him, the Pater R. de Vries Straat. The trial of these 2 guys actually began in June of 2022, and it finished. And the judges were literally like about to give their verdict, but then it all had to be stopped. The prosecutors filed new evidence against other murder suspects, so they named 4 more suspects in the case: Christian M., Conrad W., Heroer M., and Erickson O. We don't have their full names or much information about them. But this was a highly unusual step to take in court, and it forced like the complete cancellation, mostly because one of the judges was actually moving out of the Netherlands, so they had to make a replacement, and because of that, they just had to start all over. So the trial is supposed to begin again this summer, the summer of 2023.
Coming in the summer of 2023, the trial of the murderers of Pater R. de Vries.
Nice, you said that so fancy.
I just felt like a movie trailer when you were like, coming in the summer of 2023. Coming soon for you to own on video and... no, it's DVD and video cassette.
So once we have more information about this, once there's been a conclusion with a verdict and things like that, I will update you. And I really, really hope that Pater gets justice in this. Like, I think we owe it to him.
It's only fair, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's only fair. After all that he did, like, we need to make sure that justice is found in this case. So just to end today on a note for Pater. So I really love this quote. Before his death, he was interviewed, and it was while this whole thing was going on with this scary Ridwan Taghi mafia boss guy. And he was asked, like, do you find it scary to be involved in this guy's trial? Perhaps the most ruthless criminal of the last 10 years in the Netherlands. And Pater's response was, I'm not scared, but Nabil's brother and his former lawyer have been murdered already, so you don't have to be hysterical to think that something could happen. But that's part of the job. A crime reporter who, at really tense moments, comes up with, oh, now this is getting a bit too intense for me. Those people should start working somewhere else. So I really like this. Like, he was fearless. He was fierce and fearless. He was an advocate his entire life. He routinely denied security. And he had a tattoo that said, on a bended knee is no way to be free. Meaning, he refused to change his life for anybody. And I think the Netherlands is a lot worse off, like, now that he's gone. So that is all I have on Pater R. de Vries. What do you think about him, Emily? He's a cool guy, right?
I mean, we already know that I am enamored with his work.
He's also, like, a good-looking guy. Like, I think he's pretty hot.
Oh, see, so I've never Googled him.
I don't know if you think he saw. I mean, he was, like, old at the time of his death, like, 64, you know. But I was still, like, he was an attractive guy. He looks like he does look like a cop, even though
he's not terrible. Like, he has like a very David Hasselhoff-y kind of a look, yeah.
And I was just like, like I can
like, okay,
dig it.
All right.
He was really like sporty too. Like, he was really active and like in great shape at 64. So, yeah.
I mean, truly. Before any of this, before I even really knew who he was, like, the first time you talked about him, I very much pictured him as, like, a really tall man with glasses and a comb-over, slightly balding. He's not like that, everybody. He's, like, if you took, like, David Hasselhoff and Sylvester Stallone and kind of squished them together into one human being, it's kind of what you get.
Yeah, you can Google him. Maybe you'll think he's...
I don't know. Sometimes he makes this face that's a little weird that I'm just, like, not vibing with. But most of the time.
All right. Well, that is all I have for you today. Unless you have anything else, Emily, we can sign off.
No, I'm ill and dying. Don't request things of me.
All right. Sorry. Yeah, let's go to bed. I am tired. I got a puppy here. He's been sleeping really good, though, for the last... little while, so I'm gonna turn on my AC, I'm gonna get ready for bed, I'm gonna snuggle a puppy, and
I'm gonna go eat dinner. How sad is that?
Oh, that's a late dinner.
I know. Everyone pity me. Okay.
I didn't have dinner today.
Oh,
so.
Oh, okay, that's worse. Everyone pity Courtney.
And I'm not gonna, because I have no food here and it's late, so I'm just gonna go to bed, but all right, whatever. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes of Spook Pod. New ones are out every Friday. Available now for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to talk to us? Have questions? You can email us at thespookpod@gmail.com or follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Reddit @spookpod.
For a full list of episodes, more deets, or to see what's coming next, visit our website, spookpod.com.
This has been a presentation of Mostly Awkward Media.
See you next week!